Support for this podcast and the following message come from American Express. American Express brought together 100-plus companies to provide offers and resources to help small business stay in business. StandForSmall.com/podcast. Powered by American Express.
Welcome to The John Roa Show, a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. This is Leading From Home, a special limited series where I'm checking in with leaders and entrepreneurs from across the country on how they're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. It's Monday, May 4th, and if you can believe it, it's been 54 days since the pandemic began. Every movie and every TV show has been affected by this pandemic. It's changing the entertainment industry globally in front of our eyes. From theatrical releases to film festivals to distribution, the outbreak has effectively canceled Hollywood. And there's really no end in sight. It feels like we're living in some kind of post-apocalyptic horror film on loop. Less than a decade ago, director Steven Soderbergh released the film Contagion about a fictional global pandemic. The movie's plot has come to eerily resemble much of our lives right now. When Hollywood hit pause, along with everyone else in the world, it affected everyone in that wide-ranging industry, from executives to actors and writers and directors and producers, to the studios and distribution models. Everyone is affected, even the viewers at home, like me, who are craving new content and hopefully ways to distance ourselves from our current situation for a minute. So what will a post-pandemic Hollywood look like? Today, I'm going to ask Laura Bickford that exact question. She's a Hollywood producer who's been nominated for Academy Awards and Emmys behind one of the best films ever, Traffic. Laura joins the show today to share her feelings, predictions, and thoughts on what's to come next in Hollywood and hopefully her getting back to work. I'm so excited to talk to you. Thanks for doing this. In looking up kind of your background, first of all, it's incredibly impressive, and it's an industry that I absolutely love and worked in for a small period of time, and have been so fascinated in the effects of all of this insanity on the industry, because as you just alluded to, we're not filming, we're not in production. We are, even though people are in media consumption mode, we have some in backlogs that are being released, and I know you have one such film coming, but we're not making any, and that's going to cause this, you know, cascading black hole in media coming up. And so, you know, I've been wondering, like, are we going to have any releases in 2021 and those kind of questions. And so I would love to hear from a big time producer's point of view on kind of how your world is, you know, first personally, like how you've been handling this and what you've been up to, and also your thoughts on what's to come in the film and TV industries.
Well, I think the positive side is that we all are used to working and not being in production. I mean, you know, we're not in production full time. So this period of development is very active, and it's the one thing that people can be doing, and it's the one area that the financiers, studios, distributors can be developing. So there's active development going on. And being a TV project that we just got off of Zoom, that's the Italian co-production, and you know, we've got the writer, and we're going to be pitching, and we're going out to directors, and we're getting all of our ducks in a row, which is an ongoing part of our business, you know, before the quarantine, during, and after.
Right.
So my actual days aren't hugely different in terms of development, and it's, you know, great to have that. I'm working on a couple scripts with various writers and various directors and various producers and various actors. Now we're doing it remotely, mostly Zoom, instead of in person.
Sure.
That sort of keeps you buoyed. You know, you're just like, okay, well, we're just working. And this will be over and we will get back to making things. I also have a film coming out, as you mentioned, in 2 weeks, and that's a whole different, I mean, coming out is in quotes because it's going to be released on pay-per-view platforms and not theatrically, and the press for that is all being done remotely. So a couple, I mean, I've been seeing films that are new releases in the independent film world, like True Story of Ned Kelly is coming out this weekend, and George Mackay is doing all his press on little video clips, and Dakota Fanning on our film will be doing all her press and video clips. And, you know, that's not ideal for people promoting the film, but at least, you know, we're all, it's all happening.
Yeah.
And I think, so the production is where we get really scared, because I don't know, nobody knows when that's coming back and how we're going to be able to work safely.
Sure.
And Soderbergh has just started a committee at the Directors Guild to start, you know, coming up with, to start exploring ways to work safely. You know, a production has, you know, 50 to 200 people working together on set. I think, I imagine what's going to happen is that at a certain point, it's really about insurance for the independent sector. In order to be financed, we would need insurance for the actors getting sick, or the director sick, or key crew getting sick. And I just don't know how we're going to get that insurance. And that means we won't get the financing from the sort of independent sector. It means that, what that means to me is that the distributors like Netflix, Amazon, Disney, Warner's studios, that they will be self-insuring and building into their budgets some sort of pad or contingency for if they have to shut down production.
Yeah.
And that will be the only way that they will be able to make product, and they will need product, so they will do it. But our budgets on the independent side, you know, when we go to finance our films, we have to get a completion bond and insurance, and the price of the film is locked in, and it's based on its value in the foreign marketplace and theatrical, and all of that modeling, I just think was collapsing somewhat anyway, and has been since 2008 been collapsing. I mean, Traffic was a $60 million movie, and if I was making that kind of drama for theatrical today, they would want me to make it for, you know, 12.
Exactly.
But the question is the $12 million movie collapsing now? And it might well be, you know, or is the theatrical movie? You know, I just don't know when the theaters are coming back. I don't know if that model of financing, which has been our alternative bread and butter to the studios, how that's going to work. And that's really terrifying to the whole sector. But just the production people, I mean, it's just so heartbreaking to think how long can people last without working. I mean,
And that's what I wanted to get to, because I, you know, you hit an important point. I'm not sure people understand just how many individuals are on a set and then involved in the whole production. I mean, it is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people in many cases. And a lot of them, you know, you're not talking about incredibly high living wages. You're not talking about necessarily consistent work. So they're kind of living in a somewhat bootstrapped capacity, period, in a good day. And then you toss this in the mix, and it just sounds somewhat potentially catastrophic to that entire line of business.
Well, it is. And we saw it happen in 2008 as it played out post-2008. Right. And all of the rank and file moved out of California and moved out of Los Angeles. And you could feel the effect in various neighborhoods when people just all moved to Atlanta, where the tax breaks were, or to, you know, Austin, or to Louisiana. And I remember having a line producer friend who, you know, his wife and kids lived in a nice house in LA, and were going to school in LA, and every job he kept getting was in Georgia.
Right.
Yeah. And never in LA. And after 2 years, they moved to Georgia.
That's right. Yeah.
It was like, but this is different. I mean, we saw the lack of tax breaks in California kind of, you know, we saw the business go to dust in the wind in one aspect in California after 2008. But it moved in smaller forms to other states. I mean, this is completely different, where I don't know. I think I don't know how people are going to survive for too long not working, and I don't know how we're going to work.
Right.
I have, you know, various scenarios where, I mean, obviously they can scale down crews to some extent on the smaller productions, or they can maybe figure out ways to film in smaller, you know, smaller crews.
Yeah, yeah.
We've certainly done it on the independent side, but I mean, I think the antibody test, you know, we're imagining.
I was about to ask are there going to be corona crews, like COVID crews, where the people who have had the virus already are somewhat more, you know, I guess, able to work, right?
Well, yes. I mean, that's what we've been reading about. I mean, the adult film industry was sort of a model how, you know, there was a big article, I don't know if you saw, but about how the adult film industry dealt with AIDS, which was that two adult, you know, stars before they performed would show the company that they had passed their AIDS test the day before, and they had to have, you know, a current test and show it, and everyone showed each other that their test, and then they could work. So that's certainly one strange scenario we're imagining, where we all show that we've, you know, had it and we're not contagious, so we can work. The problem they were saying with that, just, I mean, that might be not only in our business, but in lots of businesses, is that they imagine a sort of hideous situation where people, you know, a wave of people trying to get
purposely
sick.
Purposely getting it.
To get it, so they can then, and that's not going to be any good for any of us either.
I mean,
I was also thinking maybe they have, maybe there's two stages, you know, like, I mean, physical stages that you film on. One for people who haven't had it and one for people who have had it, you know?
I mean, this is almost feeling like a movie script in itself. Like, I mean, this is just so insane to consider that we might have, like, COVID passports that you effectively use to go live your life, and then people's insane, you know, the things that they might go out and do to try to get said passport to be able to go and continue their livelihoods.
Well, I mean, this is contingency and measures to take until there's a vaccination.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not going to be forever, whatever it is. It's just, what are we going to do in the meantime, and how are we going to survive in the meantime? And,
yeah, because the supply chain in your business, and again, people that haven't worked in it, I don't think realize just how sprawling it is, from pre-development to, let's call it, like, you know, multiple foreign release. Like, that entire process goes through so many channels, so many months of time, so many different people, so many different industries. I mean, and it's almost impossible to realize or to comprehend for me how the current workflow could survive, you know, either during this pandemic or quickly after, when people can't get back to work. And then you start to imagine just the repercussions of all of that streaming out, you know, like ripples of water in a pond, where, you know, you're starting to see film festivals that got canceled. That's going to affect the independent industry. You're starting to see movie theaters shut. It's going to affect theatrical releases. I mean, just the sprawling implications of all of this and where it could go in the coming months and years.
Well, I think the trend has been that it's all of our distribution of all of our content, with rare exceptions, is going to be, you know, online through streaming.
How do you feel about that?
You know, we have really mixed feelings about it.
Yeah.
I understand. I mean, we can't change it. You know,
right.
So the films that will be in the theaters are the films that are in the theaters now, you know, the big tentpole movies and the family films. And drama has, for the large part, already gone to television, and which is sort of my area of you know, specialty. And the independent drama films, we're relying on the awards interest in the foreign market.
Mm-hmm.
We still had a healthy theatrical business, and you know, in 2000, the value of a film in the pre-sale market, the U.S. value, was 50% of the budget. And today the U.S. value is zero as a pre-sale. You can sell your film after, but
sure,
you know, no one's going to pre-buy your film in the U.S. these days. I mean, with not 100%,
right.
But
yeah.
As a business model.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally you might pre-sell the U.S., but mostly you try to make the film for its foreign value plus its tax subsidy or its tax
mm-hmm.
rebate, and then you sell it after it's made to the U.S. as your upside, or not.
Yeah.
And that's driven by festivals, as you say. So all of that sector, I really, you know, was already challenging, and had been kind of evaporating, and I think the feeling is this has just accelerated what we already knew was happening.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, things like Netflix buying the Paris Theater and, you know, starting to make, if it is all streamers making dramas, they hopefully are going to find a value in putting some of those films in the theater. Mm-hmm. I think the theater owners have blocked them from doing that because they're called the collapsing window. You know, they wanted to keep their window before a film that was on Netflix could be in the theater, and Netflix and the theaters could never line up. But I think they are going to now. I mean, I think theaters are going to be a product, and Amazon, Netflix, Disney, you know, Warner are all going to want to put some of those films they're making in the theaters. And yeah. I think that all this television being made has, now that actors and big name actors are doing miniseries and series, I think movies are like doing one episode and they have appeal again.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of eight, you know,
it does feel like it's accelerating trends that were already forming. So a couple of years ago, yes. I don't know if you know my friend Anthony Hemingway over there in LA, but he's a big TV director, did The Wire and did People vs. OJ. And he was transitioning from the directorial side to the producing side to create a production company. And I came in to run it for about a year. And so I got a crash course in your side of the world, you know, even though I was sitting more on the business half of his side so he could go do his craft. But these are the trends that I was observing a couple of years ago, right? You know, all this consolidation, that window closing, et cetera. And it seems like this pandemic and these kind of macroeconomic turmoils have now just accelerated us to things that you probably have seen coming and are kind of waiting for the shoe to drop. And they've all of a sudden become very real immediately, requiring a lot of, you know, quick pivoting or transitioning into those new normals.
Absolutely. I mean, on one hand, as I said, what we do as filmmakers in terms of development doesn't really change. You're still doing the same thing. And everybody mm-hmm. knows that there's a need for content and people are watching more than ever. So my actual work of working with writers and working with directors, developing material, finding stories, casting them, putting together packages to finance, is what we call it, which is basically to make a movie, you need a script, a director, actors, producer, and money, you know, and those are what we're working, all of those pieces on lots of different projects in different stages all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how they're going to be seen, how we're going to consume them has just been, you know, changing at a breathtaking speed already.
Are there any upsides? Or is there any, like, the one thing I have observed, I'm talking to a lot of different leaders and from small business owners to tech entrepreneurs to, you know, to an HGTV host to an NFL coach. And like, I'm really trying to get the most diverse look that I can on how people are leading and doing their jobs from home. And the one thing that's been somewhat inspiring is that people are finding upsides, even very strange upsides, that, you know, some businesses are finding they're enhanced in productivity or creativity by being able to connect easily instead of having meetings that are, you know, cross office or whatever. You're having other people who are finding other sorts of efficiencies in their business or seeing consolidation in a positive way. Are there any upsides that you're seeing with this? Or is there something that we can look at as a potential bright light that could come out in 3 or 6 months from this in your industry?
Well, it's a good question. I think I think we have a lot to be grateful for, that we can stay afloat and all be connected through Zoom and working, and that people are in developing, which is a different aspect than the production people who are just, you know, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
In terms of the consolidation, I mean, the good thing I think is that there's more competition to Netflix and Amazon. I mean, you wouldn't want the collapse of the theatrical and not have the studios now, which they've now, you know, gotten up to speed and
right.
are there's some competition. I mean, competition is good for producers, and we want more than two outlets.
Yep.
One of the new things that we're considering doing while we can't shoot and that I think will continue after is sort of podcasts and casting scripts that we're producing with directors and actors as like almost like radio plays. But because podcasts have become so popular, it's a sort of new area where you can do it as a radio play, and then someone might buy the IP to do the movie or TV series later.
Sure, yeah.
That's kind of fun. I just got pitched one to, you know, see if I was interested in that area this week, and I thought, how fabulous, because everyone's sitting at home and we can do it remotely, and it'll be really
that's right.
fun.
That's right.
And there's actually a business there. I mean, there's people that are going to pay you to write and produce and direct and, and act in this radio play.
That's right.
So, that is kind of a thing I would have probably never done otherwise. And it's probably a really good new, you know, area to be productive in.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I just signed my deal for my podcast with iHeart right before the pandemic hit. I think that was the last deal they signed before they shut the whole company down. And, but in the midst of our negotiation, a clause fell into my contract, which was a first look option for Universal. But, you know, for audio. So that happened in real time as I was in my negotiations for them, which is, I thought was pretty interesting. I mean, to your point, it's like there's some interesting blurring of lines in these forms of media, and these new mediums like podcasts are becoming popular enough to be directly attached to different series and streams. And that to me is pretty cool.
Really cool. And I mean, this isn't an opportunity because of the pandemic, but just in general, because of the pushing down of the cost of things, you know, which is good and bad, the upside is that there's certainly more diversity of voices.
Mm.
And that is a huge trend. And we've never had more diverse content, more access to diverse content, more diversity being a goal, as a business goal in making of content.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the upside. I mean, the downside for someone in my position is that, I mean, it's great if you're just starting out, but it's like, well, yeah, but I don't really want to make $1 million movie. I wanted to make a $60 million movie.
That's right. Yeah. Well, because 20 years ago, you made Traffic, one of the great films of all time. And as you said earlier, you know, a $60 million film. This might be a difficult question to answer, but what would have happened 20 years ago had a pandemic like this sunk into the industry? What differences would have happened then? Would it have been, I don't know if better or worse is the right way to say it, but would it have been easier or more difficult than today?
I have no idea. I mean, I feel like the pandemic that hit the film business was in 2008. Just before that, all the studios bought up the independent distributors.
Mm-hmm.
So all the studios then had a kind of awards division or art house division or whatever they wanted to call it. And when we had the, you know, depression or great recession or whatever the hell they call it, the collapse, they just shut them down. They just shut them all down across the board. That was it. And it was when the studios realized, why would we spend, you know, $50 million marketing a $50 million movie when spend $50 million or $20 million, let's say, marketing a $50 million movie, we're just not going to do it anymore.
Right.
It was the business model of the, because of the marketing and distribution costs didn't make sense to them anymore. And they just shut it all down and it just disappeared. But, you know, you don't know that. They don't make an announcement. So it takes you a few years to realize,
exactly.
Like, oh, that's all gone away, you know? And as you're kind of readjusting and you still want to tell the same stories, you're just figuring out a different way to tell them, because I don't think you're just driven by what you want to make. I mean, you're driven by what you're driven by. You know?
That's right.
So it's not like you go, well, I'm not going to do it. It's just, I got to do it a different way.
That's right. You're a couple of weeks away from your release that you alluded to earlier with Dakota Fanning, Sweetness in the Belly, I believe it's called. And that was a decision I'm sure you had to revisit or consciously make around, do you release in the midst of all of this and do things differently between media and production or distribution, et cetera, or do you wait if that was even a possibility based on timing? But for what you can talk about, I'd love to hear more about kind of that process and how you guys decided that it was the right thing to do to release in early May.
Well, I'm an exec producer on that film, which is something I don't normally do. It's normally something I've developed and I'm on set and this was a Canadian-Irish co-production, and the Canadians don't allow North Americans to produce films that they subsidize. And you have to sign these affidavits and say you'll only be involved 20% of the time. which isn't really the right, I mean, in terms of the answer to your question, why are we releasing now? It was a good time to release this particular film, I mean, this platform for right now. If we waited, you know, there's going to be so much coming out when this is over, that it just seemed an opportunity that had to be taken now.
Sure.
It was sort of planned for now already. It was planned for a theatrical release now and an online platform, mm-hmm. and a pay-per-view platform. And what was explained to me, because this is a new sort of this online theatrical simultaneous release is new for me. It was explained to us that we should not give up the opportunity to release now, even though we can't have the theatrical component, because our placement is as if we did in the sort of online queue. They said it's the same as being at the front of the aisle. It's like being next to the cash register rather than being down the aisle.
Sure.
Because it's the reason we're not having the theatrical is because of the pandemic, not because we're not supporting it with the advertising dollars and all of that.
Yep.
So that was the decision to release now, despite the fact there's no theatrical.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody felt this particular film, which is, you know, a beautiful film about friendship and refugees in London in the 70s, and it's directed by an Ethiopian director, and it's about the Ethiopian women refugees in London in the 70s, that it would fare better when, you know, with 20 other movies and whenever we go back, you know, theatrical. So it seemed like the right thing to do was take the opportunity to go now.
Absolutely. Man, it's so fascinating. You know, this is one of the industries that I've been thinking about and was so glad to have you on to talk through, because, you know, it is unique in so many ways. And hearing, you know, your predictions, you know, as frankly dire as they might be about the production side, you know, first of all, it brings a lot of just empathy. I couldn't imagine being in one of those positions. But also, I think about the mid to long term of what this is going to do to releases, right? And I have to imagine that there's a significant lull, like there appears to be in production, that probably started, 45, 60 days ago, and is going to go at least another handful of months before it's full cycle again. At the same time, you're going to have people dropping out of that pool, right? Who are going to, you know, go a different direction, not be waiting around to get the phone call if they're, you know, going to, you know, on the line of production. Are we going to have a significant lull in releases coming up? Do you think that's how that equates, that there's going to be a 3 or 6 or 9 month gap where there's going to be very little new content coming, or is there enough backlogged?
Well, I think initially there's going to be a glut because there's going to be, you know, things bumping into each other that haven't come out for the last however many months it will be, but there will be a lull, you know, at some point. It really depends how long it goes on. And that's why I think there's just these, you know, committees, people in rooms right now trying to figure out the big question. How can we go back to production? Because we can't survive, any of us, you know, until we can figure that out. I mean, we can survive in development for a certain period of time. We can keep releasing things that, you know, online or non-theatrical, or things that have been made and haven't been come out yet. But I mean, yeah, there is going to be a glut. And also, you know, we all actually get paid when we make things. I mean, development is just a part of it. You know? So it's really, really the big question. I mean, I was talking to one of the foreign sales companies about just the UK market, theatrical market. And they thought, you know, if it's July that we can go back to work, that's, you know, one thing. If it's September, it's another. And if it's next year, there's just quite a few companies that are going to go under. And that there will be consolidation, but, you know, there's just no way that some of these distributors can survive that long. So that's just terrifying for all of us, because the trickle down effect is then don't have those buyers, and then you only have 2 buyers and not 8 buyers, or they consolidate and now you have 3 buyers instead of 8 buyers. And in addition to the human cost of their livelihood, I mean, and all of that, that just on a, you know, business level, it's just not going to be good for filmmakers to not have any UK buyers.
Yeah.
It's a big market.
Well, it's fascinating, and you know, I can imagine that it's a stressful time in the industry for a lot of people. And I've talked to a few folks from my kind of past work out there, and I think people are all feeling very similar things. Which, and this is not just your industry; this is everybody. You know, this is probably the first time, for sure, in our lifetimes, but probably ever, that every single human on the planet is feeling something similar. Right? This is never we've never had a unilateral crisis like this. But I'm imagining across your industry, people are feeling it even more heavily because it is one of those non-essentials that's also just sprawling international and so multifaceted that everyone is being affected greatly. So we wish you the absolute best of luck and can't wait to see the film coming out in a couple of weeks here. And we'll look forward to seeing what happens after and would love to maybe, you know, chat with you again once things settle to hear how it's all gone and to kind of get a take on how the industry is re-emerging once we're all allowed to go back outside.
Absolutely. I mean, the good news is, and we try to be grateful, is that, you know, everybody mm-hmm. wants content, everybody's watching, and we have the ability to write and communicate and work on stories, you know, from our bedrooms with other people and connect and hang in there.
Great. All right, Laura, take care, be safe and travel safe. And maybe we'll be able to catch up here in New York sometime.
I would love to.
Great. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. A big thanks to Laura Bickford for being on the show today and sharing her thoughts on the ways Hollywood is adapting to all the crazy shit we're dealing with. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe, leave a review, or share with a friend. 100% of the profits from this limited series will be donated to charities that are helping people through the global pandemic. If you're currently leading from home, or if you're an entrepreneur who wants some advice or to talk through something, I want to hear from you. Head over to roa.com/podcast for ways to connect. That's roa.com/podcast. Or hit me on social media at John Roa. That's J-O-H-N-R-O-A. The John Roa Show is a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. For more podcasts from us, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows. A special thanks to my producers, Jordan Gaspore here at the show, and Tyler Klang over at iHeartRadio. We'll be back with you on Wednesday. In the meantime, stay safe out there.
What's up? I am Machine Gun Kelly, and look, I know Halloween is going to suck this year because there's no trick-or-treating and all that, but I've got a treat. There's a musical podcast that I made with my friends 24K Golden, Ian Dior, and Dana Dentata, and Satan. Well, Satan's not my friend, but Tommy Lee is, and Tommy Lee is playing Satan. But don't just take it from me. Tell him, Satan.
Thanks, dude. It feels great to be playing Satan on this podcast. Listen to Halloween in Hell on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or whatever you get your podcasts on.